like many people across the country and the globe, we have been following closely and carefully the story of the United Healthcare CEO, Brian Thompson, who was gunned down in Midtown Manhattan. And today an arrest was made. I'm going to read to you the latest New York Times article updated 56 minutes ago, or at least the first two paragraphs. So we know we're getting the latest information. A suspect was charged with murder on Monday in the assassination of the chief executive of United Healthcare in Midtown Manhattan, hours after he was apprehended in Pennsylvania. Luigi Mangione, 26, has been charged in Manhattan with second-degree murder, according to online records, court records. He is also charged with three gun charges and forgery. Earlier on Monday, today, Mr. Mangione was detained at a McDonald's in Pennsylvania by police officers responding to a tip from an employee there. We'll start there. For those new to our channel, I am a journalist, and John, Dr. John Mathias with me, is a forensic psychologist, a criminal psychologist, and we are going to tell you what we know so far about Luigi Mangione, this crime, and what you think, John.
This is an absolutely fascinating case to me for a lot of reasons, but I had a quick dinner with my father this evening, and my father doesn't follow crime. He doesn't care about crime. He doesn't know anything about crime. And all he could do tonight was ask me questions about this particular crime. So I thought, oh, we really need to talk about this. I think there's a lot of interesting elements of this crime already. So let me just say that my analysis is obviously speculative and preliminary because we just know basic facts.
Right.
But I think what we do know, there are some pieces of this puzzle that are already, I think, important, and they start providing a bit of a picture of this guy. One of the questions people had that we've heard is, I don't get it. This guy doesn't look like a typical shooter. He's got a master's degree. He doesn't look like this loner that a lot of school shooters kind of resemble, or shooters in general, mass shooters. He seems like he's pretty well adjusted, right? We know now he has no prior criminal record. He has no, that we're aware of at this point, no drug or mental health history. He was high school valedictorian in Maryland, I believe. Yep. Is that right?
Yeah, and a private school, an elite private school.
And so people were confused. They were saying, well, this guy doesn't look like a typical shooter. And the reason that's true is because he's not. He's actually quite different than, you know, we've talked about shooters, in particular school shooters, mass shooters, on our channel quite a bit. And that's not who this guy is. A real clue to who this person is the fact that he left a 3-page manifesto. And as so far, we haven't been able to obtain any elements. Right. We haven't been able to obtain any of the contents of the manifesto. We have some of it. We have a few lines. So there's a 3-page manifesto. Here's what we know that is in the manifesto. One of the sentences is, quote, these parasites had it coming. Presumably parasites refers to, I guess the healthcare industry and or CEOs in general, corporate America. I guess
that's what people have speculated on. Yes. And that's what he's referring to. Yes. Corporate America.
One of the summaries of people that have seen the manifesto that have commented on it have said that he showed, quote, ill will towards corporate America. So I presume parasites has obviously something to do with that. Somebody else said that the manifesto had no specific threats, but it did show the mindset of someone who might engage in a targeted killing. And on that issue, there's another line we do have from the manifesto. It is, quote, I do apologize for any strife and trauma, but it had to be done, unquote. So those are the two lines I have from the manifesto. And again, this idea of apologizing for any strife and trauma is interesting because it it plausibly shows a certain amount of empathy. I mean, maybe empathy is too strong, but it suggests that this is a different type of killer. Most mass shooters aren't going to apologize in advance for a behavior like this. They're not going to apologize in advance for a cold-blooded murder. And assuming these lines are accurate, that's what he's doing here. So he sees a certain inevitability to what he's doing. Right. And that's interesting. When this crime first occurred, my first thought was, you and I had talked about this, that there did seem to be kind of this ideological component to this crime, in the sense that, for example, after the murder, he really didn't, there was no personal contact with the victim. You know, typically in a murder that's personal, or where the murderer feels some connection to the victim or wants the victim to know that they're the ones responsible, a lot of times they might walk up to the victim and say something, or they might fire another shot in close proximity. This killer didn't do that. Mm-hmm. This killer shot from a distance. There never appeared to be any personal connection between him and the victim. And so that was, to me, that was the beginning of a clue towards what this was, meaning that I felt like he's trying to make a statement, right? This is more of an ideological type murder, in my opinion. And now that we have this manifesto, I think that evidence is starting to bear that out. I told Lauren that, you know, if you look at kind of the history of ideological killers, it really, in a peculiar way, it starts with a fictional character. And that character is Raskolnikov from Crime and Punishment. Dostoevsky wrote that book in 1866. And it was considered very radical. It was considered highly unusual. There were a lot of objections to that book. It had a lot of violence in it, and which in 1866 was fairly unusual. But Raskolnikov, just to set the stage here a little bit, this is going to be a quick history, but Raskolnikov was in St. Petersburg, Russia, and Russia at the time was ruled by a czar. And there were a lot of ideas circulating at the time. There were a lot of ideas around like nihilism and revolutionary actions. And that book, Crime and Punishment, is really an attempt by Dostoevsky to kind of figure that out. And this killer, Raskolnikov, who ends up murdering several people, he's flirting with these different ideas, and one of those ideas is nihilism. And his goal, Raskolnikov's goal, is he wants to see if he's going to be this nihilist. He wants to see if he can commit a murder and essentially not feel anything. In other words, he perceives that, he uses Napoleon as an example. He takes Napoleon as kind of this great man, and he thinks that he can act like Napoleon. He can become this great figure, and these great figures like Napoleon, in his view, they don't show remorse. They're kind of these predators who do what they have to do to advance humanity. I'm setting the stage here with a book, I think, that really, it puts this idea of an ideological killer on the map for the first time in Western history. And so it's important in that sense, because Raskolnikov is Dostoevsky's attempt to work out this idea of what a killer who was killing just for an idea, essentially, or ideas. He's testing out ideas, and he's killing for a purpose, right? And that's what this guy is doing. This guy is in the lineage of Raskolnikov. You know who else is in that lineage? Ted Kaczynski. Ted Kaczynski is a pure ideological killer who, he's sending these mail bombs to different CEOs or academics who are technologically based. They're academics in the 70s and 80s who are studying artificial intelligence. And Kaczynski has this fear that somehow technology is going to ruin the world. You know, ironically, some of that might not be entirely untrue, but putting aside the fact that Kaczynski had mental health problems, And obviously the way he handled it was not healthy. That there's other ways to deal with those issues. If you have issues about technology, then engage in debate about it, right? Don't send bombs to people. The reason I mentioned Crime and Punishment, though, is that that's really where this whole idea of an ideological killer begins. And Raskolnikov, by the way, was a university student. He was extremely intelligent. He was a bit of an elitist. In many ways, Raskolnikov looks like Luigi Mangione. And that's why I think it's important, because if you want to begin to understand Luigi Mangione in some peculiar way, you have to go back, I think, to 1866 and to Raskolnikov. And if you look at Raskolnikov and the lineage of killers that come after him, you've got people like Kaczynski would be the greatest example, because Kaczynski was also, like Luigi, considered quite brilliant. He was clearly destructive and violent, but he was quite brilliant. Other murderers in this kind of lineage would include like the 9/11 terrorists. It would include Tim McVeigh, right? You have all these murderers who essentially are killing for an idea or an ideological position. And I think that's exactly what we have here.
Okay.
So you have a guy that, and by the way, this is an important part of the story. Luigi has, he was a huge reader. He was an avid reader.
This is important. Yep.
He had a Goodreads account where he did a number of reviews. In fact, he had roughly 295 reviews. And one of the books he reviewed was, guess what? One of the books he reviewed was called Industrial Society and Its Future, which was the manifesto of a one Theodore John Kaczynski. In other words, the Unabomber Ted Kaczynski, who, as I just mentioned, falls in the lineage of Raskolnikov, right? He's like the first pure ideological killer in this country, in America. And here you have Luigi Mangione reading, not only reading the book by Kaczynski or reading Kaczynski's manifesto, but commenting quite favorably upon it.
Yes.
Do you want me to pull that up? Yeah, if you want to read it, it's not that long. But I think if you want to start looking at the psychological profile of who this killer is, this review really shows a lot. This is Luigi Mangione's Goodreads account. This is his review of, you can't see that, there you go, Industrial Society and Its Future by Ted Kaczynski, who we now know as the Unabomber, obviously. This was, you can see that the review was written on February 2nd, 2024. Again, my argument is that Mangione fits into this kind of lineage that begins with Dostoevsky and it goes through Ted Kaczynski in this country, in America. And here you have someone who's deeply influenced by Kaczynski. They have different ideologies, by the way. I'll talk about that in a minute. But let me just quickly read. Let me read the review here, because this is really important to understanding who this person is. And I should say, too, obviously, this is an alleged murderer. You know, obviously, he's going to get his day in court. And, you know, we don't know how this is going to develop. But he's innocent at the moment. So we're speculating about his guilt. So here's what he says about Kaczynski, the Unabomber. Clearly written by a mathematics prodigy, reads like a series of lemmas on the question of 21st century quality of life. It's easy to quickly and thoughtlessly write this off as the manifesto of a lunatic in order to avoid facing some of the uncomfortable problems it identifies. But it's simply impossible to ignore how prescient many of his predictions about modern society turned out. He was a violent individual, rightfully imprisoned, who maimed innocent people. While these actions tend to be characterized as those of a crazy Luddite, however, they are more accurately seen as those of an extreme political revolutionary. He, meaning Kaczynski, had the balls to recognize that peaceful protest has gotten us absolutely nowhere, and at the end of the day, he's probably right. Oil barons haven't listened to any environmentalists, but they feared him. When all other forms of communication fail, violence is necessary to survive. You may not like his methods, but to see things from his perspective, it's not terrorism, it's war and revolution. Fossil fuel companies actively suppress anything that stands in their way. And within a generation or two, it will begin costing human lives by greater and greater magnitudes until the Earth is just a flaming ball orbiting third from the sun. Peaceful protest is outright ignored. Economic protest isn't possible in the current system. So how long until we recognize that violence against those who lead us to such destruction is justified as self-defense? These companies don't care about you or your kids or your grandkids. They have zero qualms about burning down the planet for a buck. So why should we have any qualms about burning them down to survive?
Wow.
We're animals just like everyone else on this planet, except we've forgotten the law of the jungle and bend over for our overlords when any other animal would recognize the threat and fight to the death for their survival. And then he quotes, "Violence never solved anything," unquote, is a statement uttered by cowards and predators. That's his review.
Wow.
That's obviously, if we want to understand this guy, I think that review provides a really good look at this guy's psyche. And I think it supports my position that this is not a typical mass murderer or typical shooter or school shooter, if you want to go with that. This is someone quite different. This is a very educated, in a way, visionary who sees himself as a revolutionary. He sees himself, I think, as someone who's clearly fighting the system. There's almost like this, there's a bit of naivety here, but there's also like this messianic utopianism that I think, you know, this killing, I think, is very symbolic in the sense that he sees this as somehow challenging the system. And he wants to, you know, I go back and forth on this issue, but I you know, when they found him today, he started shaking. This is interesting. This was in the arrest. When they found him today and they ID'd him, he was surprised. In fact, I'm going to read that because it was the most interesting part of the criminal complaint when he was arrested in Altoona today.
Okay.
Is here. It says, the officer asked the male if he'd been to New York recently, and the male became quiet and started to shake. Now, usually in an arrest or a criminal complaint, you're not going to, that's pretty dramatic. That's not typically something you would see. In other words, you're not going to reference somebody's, how they react to an arrest. You're just going to arrest them and you're just going to, you know, the defendant was arrested, right? But that's not what he says. That's not what the officers say here. He started to shake, which indicates to me that he was quite literally shaking. Not only was he shaking physically, but he was shaken by the arrest. He didn't see this coming at all.
Right. He gave them a fake arrest. Isn't that right?
He had fake ID.
Or fake ID is what I meant.
Yeah. He had a fake ID. I think he was quite startled in a way. I think that there was a part of him that thought maybe he had pulled this off. He was in Pennsylvania. He was eating at a McDonald's. I think he was just kind of chilling out, taking his time, right? He did not see this arrest coming at all. And so, which is interesting to me because the brazen nature of this crime, just kind of in broad daylight at roughly 7 a.m. in the morning in New York City, which is like the city with the most cameras and surveillance in the world.
New York City. Yeah.
And so, but I think there's a part of him that must have known he was going to be caught. And I think there's a part of him that must know that the symbolic and kind of the symbolic nature of this crime was sending a message in his mind's eye to corporate America. Right. And it was, you know, I think he's trying to draw attention to this problem in this country, or maybe around the world. And he's trying to rally support for it. So in some ways, I think this guy eventually, or maybe now, I don't know, but he probably sees himself as a bit of a martyr for this cause.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
And so he's although, although he was shaking at the time, I think I would argue that there's got to be a part of him that knows he's going to be caught, you know, he knows he's going to be caught and he's going to kind of become this martyr for this cause. Whatever that is, you know, whatever his manifesto ends up saying. But
what's one financial lesson you learned the hard way? I'll go first. For me, it's not too late to start saving. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. You do not need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that matches you and your money goals. You don't need to be rich. Acorns lets you get started with just the spare money you have right now. And one of the best things about Acorns is they allow you to see projected growth on their website. Simply go online, type in how much money you would like to put in, and see the potential future balance of your account. Sign up now and join over 13 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $22 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/hiddentruecrime or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/hiddentruecrime. Every year I make the eat healthier, workout, be healthier resolution, but every year it's hard to stick with it. If I had an automatic way to do those things, it might happen. It would be a breeze. Similarly, every year, thousands of people add saving money and investing money to their New Year's resolutions. And Acorns makes it easier to start saving and investing automatically. You don't need to be rich or have to go on some crazy budget that doesn't allow you any freedom. With Acorns, you can start with $5 or even just some spare change. Acorns shows you where your money's going and you see projected growth. Head to acorns.com/hiddentruecrime or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing in your future today. Paid non-client endorsement compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/hiddentruecrime. Hormonal changes are so hard, to say the least. Hot flashes, anyone else? Add in the thousands of hormone disruptors that are in our environment, and it is even worse. From our water, food, the air we breathe, and the clothes we wear, they are everywhere. But the good news is that when Hormone Harmony enters the picture, it can help reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony is a supplement that contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. The best thing about adaptogens, they help the body adapt to any stressors like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. Hormone Harmony is actually part of my personal 2024 playbook. Hormone Harmony makes no compromises when it comes to quality, and it shows. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. That's happy, H-A-P-P-Y, mammoth, M-A-M-M-O-T-H.com. Just use the code HiddenTrueCrime at checkout. That's code HiddenTrueCrime. Use that with happymammoth.com for 15% off today.
You know, so there's many ways in which this guy sees himself as a visionary. He sees himself as kind of this messianic, utopian idealist. But he's also kind of this elitist. You know, there's an irony here. He's clearly, there's also the, kind of this anti-capitalist undertone, right, against corporate America and greed. The monopoly money they found in his backpack would be symbolic of that, you know, that he's making fun of just commerce in general and the means of, you know, the currency and what that means and greed, right? He's kind of drawing attention to all of that and corporate greed in particular with the victim, Brian Thompson, who was in the midst of his own scandal of insider trading, where, you know, he was trying to amass a, you know, huge fortune from information that only he and a few of his friends had. So I think obviously Luigi Mangione understands that, and he's trying to draw attention to that and draw attention to his beliefs and his ideology. And I think we'll probably learn more about that over time. I'm sure this isn't the last. If he does get convicted of this eventually, this is not the last we're going to hear from him. My guess is you're going to probably see some writings from prison, right? If it gets that far. For someone of his intelligence, you know, it's interesting, though, that, I mean, he has to understand that just by targeting the CEO of United Healthcare doesn't mean he's going to solve these problems. That's where this is. That's where this is a little confusing. I mean, that there's something very impulsive about this. I mean, he planned it. He showed up in New York 10 days before the crime. Mm-hmm. So clearly this is premeditated, which, by the way, like to charge him with second degree murder, that's interesting.
I thought the same thing. I was shocked by that. They charged him tonight with murder and it was second degree murder, not first.
Yeah, I know. I mean, they can easily amend that.
They can easily amend it. You're right.
They're probably trying to figure out exactly, you know, what happened. And I don't know. I mean, but they probably don't have enough evidence to put together a solid case for first degree murder yet. I'm mm-hmm. sure they will. If he wants to be a bit of a martyr for healthcare, that makes sense to me. Like if he knows he's going to get caught, and he wants to be a martyr for healthcare reform and for all the problems in the system, you know, I guess this would be one way of doing it, not a particularly healthy way. But as he points out in talking about the Unabomber, peaceful protest doesn't work in his mind, right?
Right.
Like, arguing or trying to argue or make your case to the system doesn't work in his mind, right? So if there's no rational means, or logical, rational means of resolving a complaint, and you have this kind of intense personal pain, then you're more likely to act it out, and you're probably more likely to act it out in an impulsive manner. And at least for a moment, I guess he'll feel some sense of relief or some sense of control or whatever it is looking that some maybe a little bit he'll appease his anger to some degree, but obviously it's not going to solve his problem. So I guess if he's looking to be a martyr for a larger cause and rally a bunch of Americans in particular to his cause, that could be the case, which again would put him in that category. He would be one of Raskolnikov's, he would be in the lineage of Raskolnikov and the Unabomber. We have credible evidence that he had back problems, he had chronic pain. And that, according to his friends, that it, quote, changed everything for him. So even if you just throw that in, if you throw in this kind of sympathy for the Unabomber and this identification with the Unabomber, which he seems to have, except his obviously isn't technologically based. His is more anti-corporate in general, in particular healthcare, but probably just corporate America in general. So let's call his ideology is more, you know, anti-capitalist. Yeah. If you take that belief system and you couple it with his intense back pain and his failed back surgery, you're going to have a crime that's going to be, it's going to be much more personal, and it's going to be much more driven by anger and helplessness. And he's much more likely to act out in the way he did. However, he didn't know Brian Thompson. He knew who he was and what he represented. And so again, that's more of an intellectual murder.
Yeah.
He's killing what he symbolizes. He's not killing the person that he doesn't, right? He's murdering.
He's represents what Brian Thompson represents.
What Brian Thompson represents to him is corporate greed taken to an extreme, and corporate greed in particular in an area that he detests, which is healthcare. And that's his motive.
Yeah. Yeah.
I go back to In Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky, Raskolnikov is very similar. Raskolnikov considers himself to be a revolutionary. Raskolnikov sees himself as a great man, a bit of a martyr that's going to, in some ways, engage in murder and feel no guilt, no conscience. Now I'm really going to get deep in the weeds here, but many have argued that Raskolnikov is comparable to the philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche's Übermensch, or what sometimes translated as Superman, Overman, whatever, that Nietzsche envisioned a human being that could stand outside of common morality and stand outside of common cultural and moral codes. And Nietzsche called that the Übermensch. And many people have said that Raskolnikov was, Dostoevsky became before Nietzsche, but many have argued that in many ways Raskolnikov was the model for Nietzsche's idea of the Übermensch. And you certainly have elements of that here, that this person, Luigi Mangione, doesn't, he believes he can stand outside of law and social norms, and he can transcend kind of the normal moral codes that most of us adhere to, such as murder, and he can do it because he's justified, and he can do it because he's this visionary who, in his mind's eye, I guess, he's a visionary that's going to kind of lead the way maybe on healthcare reform. I don't know. The story still needs to be written, but I think you have elements of all that here.
Ladybug Lisa is asking, Dr. John, what does it say about those of us that have mixed reactions because we understand his grievance, CEO insider training for the personal wealth, yet, murdering is never okay. What does that say about those of us that have mixed reactions?
I think they're, like in Dostoevsky's novel, I think there's always kind of this intrigue and fascination with the rebel. You know, that Raskolnikov would be considered like an anti-hero in the sense that he commits murder, but he's also someone who's rebelling against the cultural norms of the day. And so there's something appealing about the anti-hero that challenges established norms. And certainly I think that when it comes to healthcare, most of us have probably had some issues now and then with the system, and we can relate to that.
Right.
So, And so I think, healthcare in this country is a mess, and most of us, I'm sure, can relate to that. So
we can acknowledge that. Yeah.
There's this very rebellious quality to this guy. There's this oppositional quality. And I think a lot of us, you see it in Westerns, right? We see it in a lot of the stories that that are very appealing to us. We see it in, these heroes that kind of do try to transcend some of the normal cultural mores. And there's something appealing about that, because people like that, as much as I would disagree with the way he did this, and murder is not the way anyone should solve a problem, that somebody like him would consider himself to be a revolutionary. And I think he would say that this was necessary to lead, in his mind's eye again, to lead to systemic change. So I don't know. If he doesn't harm himself at some point, which I think he'll be at high risk for, because for many reasons, not least of which would be his age, this is a guy who probably might be vocal about whatever his cause, if that's the way to call it, if that's what we call it.
Yeah. There were a couple of great comments, and I thought I had starred them, and now they're not showing up in my stars. But Omonti saying, the romantic side of us can sometimes think we could be the hero that can do things we really can't or shouldn't. I thought that was true, because Sylvie also says he seemed like a thoughtful young man that could have changed things from the inside.
Yeah.
It's a loss for all of us to see the potential thrown away. I'm sad for the victim, for him and their families, And the romantic side of us.
And the rebellious side, it's always the rebel. It's always the outsider that comes into town as the rebel in the Westerns that can affect change or that shakes up the town, right? That there's the rebel comes into the corrupt town and upends the normal hierarchy. And so a lot of times I think we can relate to that we respect the rebel, although, not committing murder necessarily, but we respect the rebel that tries to change the system.
This is a developing story. We are learning a lot. Every hour, there is more information coming out. And we will continue to follow this now and bring you what we know about Luigi. We even watched his valedictorian speech today, or I did. It seemed actually like a very simple, kind valedictorian speech. He thanked his parents and the parents of all of the students who sent them there so that he could be friends with them. People cheered him on. It is surprising to many people. This was not, let me ask you actually some of the things people have said. They're like, this isn't, they said that it's not your average school shooter. And you started with that, you know, and
right. In fact, I would go so far as to say it's nothing like your typical school shooter, that this is quite different in the sense that, as I pointed out multiple times tonight, that this is someone driven more by a particular vision and ideology than it is by you know, social isolation and bullying and a lot of things we'll see in school shooters or mass shooters.
Right.
This is not a social outcast. This is a very intelligent, successful, apparently high functioning human being. So yes.
He has about 1,500 friends on Facebook, the public Facebook friends list, and he does seem like a popular young man. And again, yes, innocent until proven guilty.
And that's part of the tragedy here, is this is someone who, he seemed really intelligent, he seemed kind, right? He was quite social, and I think this is someone who could have really contributed to society. This is someone who could have made a difference at some level, and the tragedy here is that he went down this path.
Yeah.
You know, not to harp on this, but like in the Dostoevsky book, and I know that's a fictional character, but Dostoevsky portrayed these characters so well. They feel very lifelike. That Raskolnikov was quite young. And, you know, I think one of the things that oftentimes, you know, you typically don't see older revolutionaries. They tend to be younger, like Luigi, and they tend to be more idealistic, right? I think there's something here about his naivete and his lack of life experience and his belief somehow that this kind of utopian vision he has for the world or healthcare or whatever, these anti-capitalist sentiments can somehow come to fruition. You know, there's something here that has to do with youth, I guess, is what I'm saying, in the sense that, you know, when you're younger, typically, and this would be true of me, when I was younger, I was much more idealistic than I am now. So, I probably had some anger around the fact that certain ideals were not being met in the world. And I can relate to this to some degree, but some of this is about youth, in the sense that, you know, revolutionaries typically aren't 60 years old. So, and that was a point that Dostoevsky made too. This is going to be our first analysis of this, and it's a very preliminary one, but those are kind of my initial thoughts. We value your thoughts. This is yes. going to be a, you know, ongoing dialogue, I'm sure. And we'll, you know, have to change our analysis a little bit, or we may change our analysis, obviously, as we learn more.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks everyone for being here tonight, and we'll see you soon again.
All right.
See ya. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tap, also on them. Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.